Welcome to the Students of Surgery podcast series, where we shed light on common surgical topics.
Welcome back to our podcast series. Today we have Dr. Henry Pretorius, an HPB surgeon at Steve Biko Academic Hospital. And our topic for today is going to be primary liver tumors. Welcome, Dr. Pretorius.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Pretorius, what are the types of...
Important to remember, even though we say they are common, they are actually still rare. They're just common in comparison to the other primary liver tumors. Also to remember that when we talk about primary liver tumors or liver malignancies, they have to originate from hepatocytes. And we know that the liver has got many structures that run through it and form part of its function, such as the biliary tree, the vasculature. But when we talk about primary liver malignancies, we were talking about malignancies that originate from hepatocytes. So your most common primary liver malignancy would be hepatocellular carcinoma, or HCC. And I think that's also the most important one for students to know about. The other ones are extremely rare, but it's maybe good just to know of them, such as fibrolamellar HCC, which is a lot like HCC, but maybe not, doesn't have alpha beta protein, and a good prognosis. And then the other ones are tumors that are found in the liver primarily, but they didn't find another primary source, such as epithelial hemangioepitheliomas, angiosarcomas, lymphomas, and hepatic neuroendocrine tumors.
So I think that maybe let's just chat a bit about hepatocellular carcinoma. Who gets hepatocellular carcinoma?
People that tend to get this are people with underlying risk factors. They are also found mostly in men in the age of 55, mostly because they have much of the associated risk factors. The most common risk factor in South Africa would be hepatitis B.
And some of the other risk factors?
Most of the risk factors are things that cause cirrhosis. This would be hepatitis C, alcoholism, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease actually can cause HCC prior to becoming cirrhotic, but then also non-alcoholic fatty hepatitis. And hepatitis B is one of the few causes that can give you HCC without cirrhosis and is associated with a higher viral load count.
How do patients typically present to having HCC?
Underlying risk factor usually has cirrhosis. These people have some features of liver failure. And if this suddenly worsens, this must really put you at thinking of this patient might be having an HCC. Other signs can be slightly non-specific, which is associated with most malignancies, things like weight loss, general malaise. But specific to HCC is just the fact that it's in the liver, they can have a mass in the right upper quadrant.
If you have a patient in clinic that you are concerned may have an HCC, how would you go about diagnosing them with the disease?
A lot of times a patient has an underlying risk factor and therefore you screen the patient. And that's actually the most common way to find HCC in the at-risk population by doing ultrasound, etc. So now once you've seen that there is actually a mass on screening with an ultrasound, we need to order more imaging as well as to do some serology. The serology that we do for HCC would be alpha beta proteins, and if that's raised, that's in adults, that's quite indicative of HCC. And then on your imaging, you want your classical imaging features.
And what are the classical imaging features of an HCC?
When we talk about imaging, we've got our three main modalities that we mostly use for liver imaging. So we usually always start in ultrasound. It's quite specific if it says it's an HCC, but on sensitivity-wise, it's not that great because there are areas of the liver that can't be reached easily, like posterior or near the diaphragm, etc. But the first thing is it's a solid lesion, and it's isoechoic, which means it's the same as the liver. But it may also contain some hypoechoic areas, which is usually areas where there's been central necrosis in the tumor. Most malignancies have ill-defined borders because they infiltrate the tissue. In addition to your normal ultrasound, some centers have what we call contrast enhanced ultrasound, and that makes the specificity of the test extremely good. Not always available, but when it is, it's great, and it will have similar features on the ultrasound as we will discuss on the CT. So when we do CT scanning, the most important thing is to look at the different phases of the lesion. So with HCC, we look at in the pre-contrast phase, it will be isodense with the liver, which means that it will look much similar to the surrounding liver. when you keep the contrast and you scan the arterial phase, HCC is predominantly arterial blood supply. It doesn't get its blood supply from the portal system, therefore it will enhance very early before the liver does. So then in comparison to the liver itself, it appears more white on the CT scan. But also because it doesn't have the portal venous blood supply, but when you look at the portal venous stage, when the liver is enhanced, the tumor no longer is, and it has washed out, and therefore it will appear as hypodense in the portovenous phase. On the MRI, the last modality we usually use for liver imaging, as sensitive and specific as a CT would be if you do not use liver-specific contrast. The problem with MRI, it's very expensive, takes a lot of time, so we usually keep it for people who do not have, who have a contraindication to doing a CT scan, such as nephropathy or failure, pregnant ladies, etc. So on the MRI, these lesions would classically have a T2 weighted imaging will have high intensity, and a T1 weighted imaging will have a low intensity. When you add liver specific contrast, the same principle applies as to the CT angiography, where in the arterial phase the lesion would enhance, but not in this case because it's liver specific. So it will just stay hypodense, whereas the liver enhances in the portal venous phase and they become very clearly evident.
So I'm going to put you a bit on the block. Can you tell me in one or two sentences, how do you diagnose HCC?
We're looking for a hypervascular lesion on CT or on MRI, which has an early arterial enhancement and early venous washout, with an alpha fetal protein on serology of more than 400. I've not mentioned biopsy because we do not biopsy these lesions.
So Dr. Pretorius, how would you approach the management of a patient with HCC?
We would like to first look at specific things. One, we want to know what is the underlying pathology. So in this case, would be HCC. What is the patient's liver function? So the status of the rest of his liver. Is it able to do the job? And the third thing is this patient operable? So what is the patient's performance status?
And taking that into account, how would you now approach the resectability of a patient with HCC?
The system we use, which is called the BCLC, which stands for the Barcelona Clinic of Liver Cancer, they created a very nice guideline on how to manage patients with HCC. In those guidelines, they talk a lot about transplant, which is the main goal to curing, but in South Africa, we've got a scarcity in organs, and it's rare to transplant a patient for HCC in South Africa. So it's good to ask about the resectability. Because these patients usually have underlying liver pathology, it's seldom that they're actually resectable by major resections, especially when there's cirrhosis. So then we cannot resect. The people that are resectable mostly will have good underlying liver functions, and a lot of times would be underlying hepatitis B patients. In those patients, resectability, the main assessment would be to look at what is the future liver function of this patient, and is the patient well enough to sustain major surgery such as an hepatectomy or segmental resection. This is used by volumetrics, and we do have certain predictive models that we use, but we're looking to obtain at least 40 to 50% of future liver remnant volume in a patient who's preferably a child's PA.
So in the patients that we're not able to operate, what are some of the modalities that we could treat them with?
So this would be patients that are either not fit for major surgery. In those cases, we would look at ablative techniques, which you could use when the tumors are small enough. That means they should be less than 3 centimeters in diameter. Otherwise, the ablative technique cannot reach the entirety of the tumor, and not too many lesions. So usually also less than 3 lesions. The techniques that are available for those patients would be things like radiofrequency ablation and microwave ablation, which are the two most commonly used methods for that. There are other modalities we can add onto that, such as TACE, which is transarterial chemoembolization. There are newer things on the block like DEPTACE, where they add radioactive beads into the TACE, but there's not been much advantage when you add those things. So basically, if you cannot operate the patient because of his performance status, you look at other ablative techniques to see if you can eradicate the tumor. Then there's another group of patients that you cannot operate because of the physical tumor itself, which is too advanced, which means those patients usually won't be able to ablate. These patients could still benefit from TACE, where we give arterial chemotherapy to the tumor itself and see whether it can shrink perhaps. This can have some advantage to the patient. Or in other things, we can go into the certain systemic therapies we can use for these patients, such as sorafenib, which has a very limited role in HCC and with a very little benefit of maybe 2 to 3 months of overall survival. But the mainstay of those patients is still to support the underlying liver function. These patients have got liver pathology.
Earlier you mentioned fibrolamellar HCC. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about that disease?
Fibrolamellar looks exactly like a HCC, maybe has a central scar on the scan, but they do not have an underlying risk factor. Also, it is equally found in males as in females, so no male predominance, and it's usually in younger patients. You can even find it in 5-year-old children, usually up to about 35 years of age. And then the other main difference between fibrolamellar and normal HCC is that fibrolamellar does not express alpha beta protein and has got a much, much, much better prognosis. So they can have a 75% long-term survival rate. Poor prognostic features in fibrolamellar HCC would be positive lymphadenopathy in the portal area. So, and otherwise, usually we could resect them because the underlying liver still is in good function. As we mentioned earlier, we assess these patients in a three-way: function of the patient, function of the liver, and the pathology itself. And these patients usually are young and healthy, and the remaining liver is still healthy. So you could actually go to as much as only a 30% future liver in that, and they would still probably be good.
You also mentioned some very rare primary liver tumors. Would you maybe give us just a few words about those, just for completeness sake?
The other ones, once again, are extremely rare. So don't go and read too much about them, because you might see one ever. These are like angiosarcomas, epithelial hemangioendotheliomas, hepatic lymphomas, which are not resected, but rather managed with chemotherapy. Mainstay of the CHOP regime is now a new drug called rituximab that can be added to that. Primary hepatic neuroendocrine tumors are actually managed according to the ENET guidelines, as any neuroendocrine tumor should be. These could include a resection, and the only reason it's called the primary hepatic is when you cannot find another source for primary.
How would you summarize today's talk for us?
So I think in summary, primary hepatic tumors are actually rare, except for a little small subgroup of people with risk factors where you get the HCC. If you as a clinician find a liver tumor, the important things are: one is to image it, two, do not biopsy it, three, refer the patient to a specialist.
Thank you very much for a succinct talk on a very wide topic. I'm sure we'll hear from you in future podcasts.
This edition of the Students of Surgery podcast has been produced by Tux FM. Visit www.tuxfm.co.za for young, fresh, and relevant content. That was another edition of the Students of Surgery podcast series, where we shed light on common surgical topics.